Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And you're tuned to KBOO Portland Community Radio 90.7. Up next, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear a speech by the late feminist leader, Betty Friedan, author of The Feminine Mystique.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tucci Ristorante, an Italian dining house honoring the memory of Mary Cipolla Matucci and the spirit of the Lido restaurant in which she worked for 50 years. Tucci Ristorante features sustainable Northwest ingredients, drinks in the Lido bar, and is open every day in downtown Lake Oswego. Information at tucci.biz. That's TUCCI.BIZ.
We have to somehow organize again. Organize again. You know, well, I mean, you laugh. But, I mean, I'm serious.
There's a river of birds in migration. A nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi, I'm Wings producer Frieda Worden. In 1963, I was 16, and my mother handed me her paperback of Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique. "I think you'll like it," she told me. 30 years later, I finally did read it, and I did like it. By then, I recognized its author, Betty Friedan, as a founder of the U.S. National Organization for Women. I'd heard about her homophobia in calling lesbians a lavender menace within the women's movement, and then seen her at the U.S. National Women's Conference in 1977, where she openly changed her mind and supported sexual rights of all women. Friedan was trained as a psychologist. Her books include It Changed My Life, The Second Stage, and The Fountain of Age. She also co-founded a research organization called Women, Men, and Media, following up ideas she put forth in The Feminine Mystique about media trends that attack women's self-perception. The following talk was given in 1995 when Friedan was 74. She would die on her 85th birthday, February 8, 2006. Introducing her at this conference of American Women in Radio and TV was Nancy Woodhull, co-founder of Women, Men, and Media, who also passed away in 1997. From the Wings archive then.
The number of times women are mentioned on the front pages of 20 newspapers in this country dropped from 25% last year to 19% this year. The front page photos containing one or more females dropped from 39% to 33%. The front page bylines went up slightly, but female journalists do not quote women any more than the guys do. The concern is the drop that we're seeing between last year and this year after 6 years of seeing it go up. And so I turn to Betty to discuss the study and also the other things that she sees happening in women's society today and the society as a whole. Betty Friedan?
Well, I'm very glad to be with you here today. These are dangerous times. All the gains that have been made for women that bring you here are in danger. If you'll remember, and most of you are not old enough to remember, but 30 years ago, there was only one image of women in all the mass media in America and in the sophisticated textbooks as well. Women defined only in sexual relation to man, only as man's wife, mother, sex object, housewife, server of physical needs, husband, children, home, never as a person defining herself by her own actions in society. That image was so omnipresent. It had blotted out of national memory and personal consciousness the whole 100-year battle for women's rights that had seemed to come to a dead end before I was born with the winning of the vote for women. 30 years ago, when I wrote The Feminine Mystique, feminism was a word that was not used. Women's rights were not spoken of. I graduated from a great women's college, Smith. If I ever heard of feminists or suffragettes, it was neurotic spinsters suffering from penis envy. Career women had become a dirty word. The GIs came back from World War II and took the jobs. Rosie the Riveter went home again. Two generations of women that weren't able to have babies in depression and war made up for lost time. And war industry retooling needed the women as housewives to keep the washing machine and the dryer and the dishwasher going 24 hours a day. And Freudian thought came to American shores and surrounded it all with a mystique of feminine fulfillment that was different from human fulfillment. And we had to break through that, and we did. My book, Others Like It, and then, you know, once we said women are persons, no more, no less, what I did was I took women's experience seriously and figured out what had happened. Unburied that history, you know, and I put a name to the problem that had no name. I mean, women were blamed at that time for not getting the kitchen sink quite enough, not getting the husband's shirts ironed well enough, the children's bedwetting, the husband's ulcers, their own lack of orgasms. But there was no word for a problem that women might have that had nothing to do with husband, children, home, or sex. You know, and remember when I heard the young suburban housewife say, I'm BJ's wife, I'm Junior and Janie's mommy, I'm a server of meals and a putter on of diapers, but who am I? Problem that had no name. And each woman thought she was alone, but she didn't have that orgasm waxing the kitchen floor. And when the noise of a kind of an angst came out of these blissful suburbs, where between the hour of 9 and 5, nothing stirred over 3 feet tall, it was called the woman problem. And then these experts analyzed the woman's problem. Well, what's wrong with American women? And what's wrong with American women? They've had too much education. It's made them frustrated in their role as women. And we were so locked within the confines of that, you know, my book looked at that image and figured out how it distorted the reality facing the women in the middle of the 20th century in America. And women came out of their isolation and realized they shared a common situation as women. And once they said women are people, no more, no less, they could and did demand their human and American birthright, equal opportunity to participate in the mainstream of society, equal opportunity, education, professional training, and their own voice in the decisions of the society, the big decisions, and the decision, the control of their own reproductive process, the decision when, whether, how many times to bear a child. And all this is history, and it's brought you here. It's brought you here. And I can remember, I was fired from a newspaper job for being pregnant with my second child. I went to the union to complain because nobody had quarreled with my performance as a writer or editor, even though I had had one baby. And they said to me, it's your fault for getting pregnant again. You know, there was no word for sex discrimination, no law against it. All right. We changed all that. Opportunities for women in radio and television, where many of you are now, opened when the women's movement began to demand an FCC regulations and licensing regulations that there had to be significant numbers of women. After all, women are half the population. You know, if women are not represented among those who own stations, who appear on the air, who are behind the camera, there's something wrong. And you know what affirmative action is. It was not quotas. It was, if there is evidence of sex discrimination or race discrimination in a company, or in an institution with a government contract, say, or then in Title VII, in companies in general, then there has to be taken affirmative action to end it, because there was a commitment to equal employment opportunity. And you know that in a very short period of time, 25 years now, but women went from 4% of the law school class to 50% comparable in medicine and engineering and all the fields. And women's voice is heard on radio and television in all capacities, but not heard very loudly. I mean, in some senses, like talk radio, which is so almost completely male and terribly anti-woman, you know, and the number of women high up in decision-making posts in your industry, as you know, is relatively few. On the other hand, where you sit today managing the complex lives that are women's now to manage as we put together home and family and work, we are infinitely further ahead than we were 25, 30 years ago, or than our mothers ever dreamed of being. And there is a sense now, all the polls show, that women are quite satisfied with their complex life that they have today, and they wouldn't go back. You know, it's harassing when your job is being threatened, or it's harassing when the structures are not there. Jobs are still, in terms of the lives of the men of the past that had wives to take care of the details of life. But even with all that, there's a very recent survey done by Whirlpool that showed that women would not give up the complexity of lives that are composed around a balance of work and home. My friend Catherine Bateson has written a wonderful book called Composing a Life. She says we shouldn't say juggling, we should say composing. You know, that it's not bad. In my Fountain of Age book, you'll see that whereas the mental health of women used to peak in their 20s and go down every decade after 20 and drastically after 40 compared to men, now that does not happen. Women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s are good or better mental health than women in their 20s and 30s, who have more, you know, decisions to make and choices to make. But that is nothing compared to the fact that the women in the 40s and beyond do not sink into that. Depression and involutional melancholia is no longer even used as a term by the American Psychiatric Association. In another study, the Wellesley Center for Research on Women, that women who combine marriage or motherhood with work outside the home have better mental health. That, you know, frustrations or problems in one area are compensated for, you know, by satisfaction in the other. Now, the question is, what about men? Now, the research that I put together for the Fountain of Age showed that for men or women, the flexibility that comes from that larger model, that is not just a single-line career, or not just a single-line housewife or whatever, but juggling, balancing, whatever you want to call it, is much more conducive to hardiness, to vitality, to a good long life. But there is a danger of being pushed back. Just as the feminine mystique, in its extreme distortion of the reality facing women, kept women from moving as they had to move in the middle of the 20th century in America, and then the image of women began to change and reflect. When we started these studies, Women, Men, and Media, 8 years ago, women who are 52% of the population, even if you count an elementary number of times they were quoted, reported on, pictured on the front pages, and a comparable thing was in radio and TV news, was only 15%. And in some of the great newspapers like the Washington Post, the New York Times, it was even less than 10%. We coined a term. We began to talk about symbolic annihilation. And in these last 8 years, as women, in effect, became in the society so much more visible and audible, as they ran for political office and won it, 2 women on the Supreme Court, 2 women senators from the state of California, and women in every job and profession in more than token numbers, and even, you know, making visible the glass ceiling and trying to push against it. Some of that symbolic annihilation was countered, and women began to appear more and be heard more, and there was a significant increase year after year in the last 7 years. This year, a significant drop. This year, a significant drop, and it's an early warning signal to me. The symbolic annihilation of women, it seems to me, is evidence here in the monitoring of the media of the backlash against women that is going on in our society. And it has to give us concern. One of the things I do in Washington, I've been in Washington this last year, and at George Mason University, where I've been leading professor of policy, running a seminar I call A New Paradigm, Beyond Polarization. And I started running that seminar because last summer I became aware that in the last 5 years, there's been a significant drop in the income of college-educated white males. Not minority, although, you know, their situation is not great. not the high school dropouts or even the high school graduates that don't have the education for the knowledge economy, not the blue-collar workers where we know the jobs are eliminated. We already know about the drop in the income there. But this was college-educated white males in middle management. There's been a significant drop in the income for the first time since the Depression. I saw those figures, and I saw backlash. I saw backlash coming against women even before we saw the phenomenon of the angry white male in the 1994 election. That same data showed that women are not suffering that same loss, although women have ceased to move up as they've been doing in respect to males. But imperceptibly, their wages were continuing to rise, partly because more and more women are coming out of the professional schools, but mostly because the jobs that women hold, which are still mainly the service jobs, and they don't pay that well, but they are not being downsized. Those are not the jobs being downsized. Those are the jobs that are increasing in our economy. Now, those service jobs are increasingly being contracted out, and in your industry as well. Contracted out, contingency jobs, not covered by benefits, and not really, you know, job security, seniority, and the rest of it. On the other hand, in most families in America now, not just single-parent families, but mama, papa, and children families, family survival is absolutely dependent now. Male survival is dependent now on the woman's wage. It's 50%. Now, the angry white male, for 5 or 6 years, I was visiting professor in the spring semester here at University of Southern California, where I started the Women's Man in Media Studies. And I taught in the business school. And I gave lectures on diversity and management. And I'd go through the whole history of what happened to women in management. I first noticed this about spring before last. I'd go through the history of when women were in, you know, just in industry as wives, as secretaries, as cleaning women in the office, and then how they began to get into management, and then the whole equal opportunity legislation and the rest of it. And the class would be, like, say, about 60% white male, the rest, you know, minority, Latino, black, Asian, and women. I began to sense waves of hostility that I haven't felt in years, since the very beginning of the women's movement. Well, I stopped my lecture, and I said, I don't know what's happening here, but I said, I think this. You've been brought here because your bosses think, this is the executive MBA, that you're geared for top management jobs, and you are bright and you're sophisticated, and so I assumed that you would take for granted assumptions of equality, the values of equality and diversity, and I'd start from there. But I said, what I have a hunch is that you may be secretly worried, with all the job downsizing that's going on in California, that the jobs that you are supposed to be geared for may not be there when you get out. And you're blaming it on women and blacks and women and minorities. And you'd have no right to do that because they're not taking your jobs away from you. It is the downsizing. And the downsizing, which is often very short-sighted and in terms only of the next quarter, you know, profit share. But I say you have to look at the reality of the situation and not make women and blacks a scapegoat. Well, it was like taking the lid off Pandora's box. And they said, well, you may be right. But I'll tell you this. If a job isn't there for me when I get out of here, I won't have an even playing field because the woman and the black are going to get the job. Now, you know that's not true. But what is going on in this society now is a massive scapegoating, dangerous scapegoating of women, of minorities, and a kind of a scapegoating of the most vulnerable, the older people, the poor, the children. The so-called angry white male, the sort of the hate that is being played to and magnified by Rush Limbaugh and talk radio and the militia, and that was more than a metaphor in Oklahoma bombing, the legitimate sort of anger, rage, anxiety, not only the angry white male and black male, but the anxious white woman and black women, That is being manipulated. It is going to be manipulated in a scapegoating. And I mean, there is something quite outrageous going on in a kind of attempt to destroy 60 years of social progress in this country. All of this kind of turmoil and hatred and polarization of our society, the biggest polarization of our society is the fact that in the last 10 years, or in the years since Reagan, 1% of the top wealth of society is now controlling 40% of the total resources. 20% of the top wealth is controlling 80% of the total resources. And not only the ranks of the poor and the homeless are increasing, but the middle class back against the wall. Now, since women are kind of a tricky position in all this, we are doing better than our mothers did. We are doing better than we would have dreamed of doing, most of us, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But, you know, if we just stare up at the glass ceiling while the militia gathers in front of the building ready to bomb it all down, we are being blind and we are being short-sighted. Now, you hear affirmative action talked about in the media only in terms of some supposedly unqualified black male taking a job away from an old, really qualified white male. You never hear about all the women that got jobs, that were able to get jobs, where they were able to show how qualified they were and how able they were before, where they would not have even been considered for jobs without the affirmative action. Now, the attack on affirmative action is an attempt to increase the polarization and the hate, pit white males against black males, against women, immigrants, diversionary. Well, you know, the profits continue to increase. What we ought to be considering are things like campaign for a shorter work week for everyone and some protections so that those flexible jobs that are contracted out now, or the job sharing, maybe as an alternative to downsizing, that they have some real protection in terms of benefits and seniority and promotion and the like. But what we have to concern ourselves with is that while it may not seem to affect one of us or another of us now, because we have these jobs that we didn't have before, very precarious. If they succeed in getting rid of affirmative action at this stage in history, with all the job downsizing going on, it's like a signal. You don't have to worry anymore about promoting the women, about promoting the minorities. You could get rid of them. Nobody's going to make a fuss. Go ahead. Do it. You have to worry about that. You have to worry about that. Too much of our concern as feminists in recent years, in my opinion, has been on symptoms. You know, sexual harassment, violence against women, rape, date rape, pornography. Not defending any of it. And the power of women to blow the whistle is essential. But that power comes from economic empowerment. That comes from our ability to hold the jobs like your jobs, and from some our ability to influence society as we are able to do when we do have a voice, not only in the decisions affecting of our body, but you know, in the decisions affecting the content of the media. Not enough of a voice, but a voice that we've had so far. That is in danger now. That is in danger now. And we have to realize it. We have to realize it. And we have to somehow organize again. Organize again. You know, well, you laugh. But, I mean, I'm serious. It is strange to be saying that in a group like this, where sitting here are those of us that have managed to get a voice. And the voice of women in protest has got to be heard. Because we are 52% of the population. And we are able. We are able to make our voice heard. Now, I'm going to get back to this study. Okay, I heard that the Federal Communications Commission said, where's the voice of a woman in protest? And I said, maybe the voice wasn't loud enough, but I know that a lot of women did protest when the attack on affirmative action began and the attack on welfare mother began. So I happened to be in Washington. I know that the Council of Presidents of all the women's organizations held a press conference protesting the attack on welfare mothers, and they asked me to join them on the steps of the Capitol, and we did. And we said attack on poor women is attack on all women. And they did the same thing again with the attack on affirmative action and said it's not just, you know, the black males that are involved here, but very much women, black and white. It was not covered by the media. I think they sent a few cameras. They sent a few cameras, and there were some print there. Didn't get in. It's as if the symbolic annihilation is taking place again. It's not news. It's not news. Why isn't it news? We have to do something to make sure that it gets covered, that our voice be heard in protest, and that voice gets covered. Something is very dangerous is happening today. And make no mistake about it, there is a backlash against women going on. Read a story, where have all the mothers gone on Mother's Day? Implying that because the mother wasn't home baking cookies, you know, the children were forsaken. Huh. If it weren't for the fact that mothers are able to work today, most of them, the children would go hungry, you know, in most instances. But there's a new feminine mystique here. There's a new feminine mystique going on. And this kind of coverage that we are able to pinpoint in women, men, and media, and that really significant drop after all these years of increased coverage of the news of women, it isn't that women are making less news, it's that the symbolic annihilation has set in. So I guess my word to you, it is important not to let a new feminine mystique take hold. It is important that we defend our gains. It is important even that we go beyond the narrow gender focus of recent years. It's not just a question of women against men. I mean, we're not going to say up the women, down the men, or, you know, keep on the older people, don't hire the young. I want you to read my new book, The Fountain of Age, because I take on in that a mystique that is even more pernicious, pervasive, you know, than the feminine mystique. Defining age only as a terminal, you know, program deterioration from youth to terminal senility, only as a problem for society, and, you know, as if you can sell anybody anything, you know, to make them deny age. And you go to gerontological conferences, and all you seem to hear was standing room only in the grand ballroom, incontinence in nursing homes, way up down in the basement, you know, creativity in the later years, whereas the research I put together in The Fountain of Age and in my own interview show that it's a lie that only 5% of Americans over 65 are in nursing home. Only 5% have any kind of senility. And it's not programmed. That the assumption of the program deterioration for youth was based on old men in old people's homes 60 years ago with no families, removed from society. Their brains and their testes did shrink from disuse. But the more recent research done on men and women aging in communities, Sweden, other Scandinavian countries, Britain, here in the U.S., shows no significant decline until well in their 80s or just before death. Aging in communities. And the most important thing, purposes and projects that used their abilities and kept them part of the community and bonds of intimacy. We can't let them scapegoat women. We can't let them scapegoat older people. We ourselves are all getting older, you know. We have to see this, and we have to have a new paradigm, a new vision of community. And women, you, who have the voice, we have to rise now. Not only to defend our rights, but to enlarge the thinking from the polarization that is tearing our society apart to a vision of community that will say that the political priorities for this nation, this rich nation, aging nation, at the peak of its powers, but maybe on the verge of decline if it doesn't transcend the polarization, you know, use our powers for a vision of the community that puts the priority of people's lives as they are lived first. Women and men, young and old, all colors, all creeds. And we can do this, and we have to.
Betty Friedan, June 3rd, 1995, addressing American women in radio and TV. Her speech was recorded for Wings by Flavia Potenza and edited by Melanie West. Please visit our archives at www.wings.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including Ann Glickman for digitization of the archive, your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Il Dono, The Gift. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
One, two, ready, go!
Tune in to KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to 5 stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You can help KBOO end the spring membership drive early. Donate right now and be entered into the spring membership drive sweepstakes. One lucky KBOO supporter will win a prize package that includes a 6-month VIP pass to the Crystal Ballroom that allows you and a guest entry to every show, even if it's sold out, as well as access to the VIP viewing area. A 1-week artist residency at Southwestern Lodge in Seaview, Washington on the Long Beach Peninsula, $200 in gift certificates to the Portland Saturday Market, and 10 treatments at Working Class Acupuncture. For every $15,000 we raise between now and May 5th, we will remove 1 day from the spring membership drive, which will be from May 6th